Good evening. I'm Ari Melber, and welcome back to our MSNBC special series, Impeachment, White House in Crisis. Tonight, we join you for the first time since the House Judiciary Committee voted to approve those two articles of impeachment against Donald Trump, clearing the way this week for the full House to vote on what would only be the second impeachment of a U.S. president in more than 100 years. Remember, Nixon resigned before he was formally impeached, let alone convicted. Now, tonight, we have a whole series of experts to help us break down the charges against President Trump and also how to watch what's coming next. We're also going to look at why Democrats chose to go with this narrow case for impeachment. I have a special guest on the other big story this week that relates the origins of the Russia probe and a new Justice Department report that really debunks many of Donald Trump's claims about bias in that issue, which of course relates to the impeachment issues. But now we begin with this extraordinary look at the events that have led to the Congress moving towards articles of impeachment.
The House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment.
A clear and present danger to our free and fair elections.
Where's the impeachable offense?
Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election? Why not let him cheat just one more time?
There are no crimes, it says it. There are no crimes. They're impeaching me, and there are no crimes.
Abuse of power, obstruction of Congress.
The question now is on Article 1 of the resolution, impeaching President Donald J. Trump for abusing his powers.
Mr. Chairman, there are 23 ayes and 17 noes.
The article is agreed to.
Abuse and obstruction. That is the core of the argument, as this week the entire Congress is set to vote on whether to impeach President Trump on those grounds, which would tee up a Senate trial on whether to remove Donald Trump from office. And that is expected to begin as soon as the first week in January. Speaker Pelosi moving forward, uniting her caucus with what many are calling the narrowest case against Donald Trump, building it solely around the actions to pressure Ukraine to interfere and help him win re-election. One article on abuse of power, one on obstruction of Congress, all about the Ukraine plot. Tonight, we're going to dig into the evidence for these articles. This is what the House is currently on the precipice of using to try to impeach the president, and it's what the Senate will ultimately evaluate. We're going to begin with this first article, abuse of power, and that is, of course, the whole show, because it is about the accusation that Donald Trump, quote, used the powers of his high office to solicit interference of a foreign government in 2020. Now, the argument here is that Trump pushed the Ukrainians to publicly announce an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden. And the evidence? Well, much of it comes, of course, from the president himself. In the notes of his call, you see him asking the Ukrainian president to look into Biden, not, say, corruption in general. Now, the Congress is also arguing that in the articles, the key to the case, Donald Trump wasn't just saying this once and hanging up the phone. That might not be impeachable, say Democrats, but in these new articles, they argue that he used agents within and outside the U.S. government to pursue the plot. And there's evidence of that as well from the public record, from the impeachment hearings, from nationally televised interviews.
Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I worked with Mr. Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine matters at the express direction of the President of the United States.
So you did ask Ukraine to look into Joe Biden?
Of course I did.
Of course he did. And then you have the crux that Donald Trump wasn't just requesting these investigations as perhaps an illicit thing, but a kind of a floating hope. No, the evidence that he conditioned two things on the announcement of these investigations that would try to dirty up the Bidens. One, the millions of dollars in military aid, and two, a much coveted White House meeting, both of which there was a lot of evidence again in those hearings.
I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign.
The possibility of a White House meeting was being held contingent to an announcement.
Was there a quid pro quo? The answer is yes.
The answer is yes, an admission under oath by someone who still works for the president. The articles also then make the case that it's important to understand how Donald Trump and the White House reacted when busted. The argument is, and the evidence suggests, that Donald Trump did relent on the quid but kept demanding the quo, giving up the extortion because they basically released the money and Ukrainians got most of it, not all of it, But they still kept pursuing that corrupt thing. The article's noting that after everything Donald Trump persisted in, quote, openly and corruptingly urging and soliciting Ukraine to undertake these investigations.
We do that all the time with foreign policy.
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Bidens. It's a very simple answer.
A very simple answer. And who's being honest? Well, you could put it like this. Mulvaney and Trump both honestly, apparently, admitted to some of this and then walked back or muddled those admissions. The public statements, though, are only one part of what Democrats say is a growing mountain of evidence, which will be the basis for this week's vote in the House, which will then tee up any Senate trial and ultimately lead to the Congress, that is the House and the Senate, basically presenting America with the question, do you leave this president in place or do you take the extraordinary step of removing him? We begin our coverage tonight with our experts, Maya Wiley, a former SDNY prosecutor on the civil side and a former counsel to the mayor of New York City, and Barrett Berger, who was a prosecutor in that same office, as well as the much-vaunted Eastern District of New York. Bankers, gangsters, the whole thing. You guys have a lot of experience. Barrett, when you look at and when viewers see just some of that evidence laid out, it looks like a strong case. And what we saw in a lot of the hearings over the past week was Republicans saying, well, pay less attention to the evidence. Look at the process. Look at the speed. Look at the witnesses. Things are generally unfair. How do you handicap and what does it mean that that's been so much of the debate?
Look, if you don't have a great argument against the evidence, then you make the only argument that's available to you, which is the process. The problem is now the stage is going to shift. Now the Republicans are going to have full control of the process. They are the ones that are going to be able to vote in the rules they like. They are going to be the ones that will have the advantage here. They're no longer going to be able to complain about the process. Now they're actually going to have to confront that evidence. And as we've seen through all these hearings, that evidence is pretty damning.
Yeah, and that evidence, that process is moving really quickly. Some of us follow this day in and day out. Some people live their lives and then tune in and say, whoa, a month ago, one thing was happening. There were these hearings. Now, next week, they're holding a vote to impeach the guy. This is real. And obviously, Maya, a lot of people think, well, what do impeachment and love have in common? And I'm sure you know the answer. You can't hurry love. You just have to wait. And a lot of people were waiting for impeachment, not hurrying it, and then all of a sudden hurry up and do it. And I want to play Chairman Schiff's argument for why that is. The Republicans have an argument that they basically Democrats are out to get Trump either way. And when Mueller didn't work, they found something else. Chairman Schiff makes a different argument about hurrying impeachment. Take a look.
The argument, why don't you just wait, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election? Why not let him cheat just one more time?
That's the right question when you're talking about whether these articles demonstrate an impeachable offense. Because remember, impeachment means not just that, and you say this all the time on the show, Ari, it's not just whether the president did something wrong, it's how serious is it, because it is a very big decision to remove a sitting president. And what Adam Schiff is saying is it's very serious. And it's very serious because it's our elections. It's very serious because it's our national security, which also includes our elections. And we have an election that's going to be coming up in 2020. And remember that Donald Trump doubled down in October on China opening investigations on the Bidens and suggesting that he would use again his office of the presidency in his trade talks with China around that. I mean, he said it explicitly. So this notion that Donald Trump is not going to keep doing this when he has made it clear in his own words that he will really helps them, in addition to taking the evidence that Barrett was talking about and that you've mentioned, really demonstrates exactly the Democrats' points, which is this isn't going to stop.
It's not going to stop, Barrett. And if that is the case, that is the part that people agree on. Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani say, we're still at it. Giuliani says, I'm going to Ukraine. I got the briefing. I got the material. That's what makes it so brazen. And so if you're not paying attention, there is sometimes the mistaken inference that if something's happening out in the open, it must be okay. But a lot of crime and a lot of mistakes, quite frankly, happen out in the open, depending on who you're looking at. And yet the Republicans have also, and we're going to hear this in the Senate, argued, well, maybe it's bad, but not a felony. Lindsey Graham was pushing that as recently as October. Take a look.
Are you open-minded if more comes out that you could support impeachment?
Sure. I mean, show me something that is a crime. If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing.
Look, as Lindsey Graham obviously knows, the standard for impeaching a president is not that he or she committed a felony. That's not the standard. It's not what it says in the Constitution. That's not what the founders meant. He knows that's not the case. If Republicans are waiting, and if the new standard is that you have to be able to prove that a sitting president actually committed a violation of the criminal code, then we have completely undercut the whole notion of impeachment. We've taken away any sort of power that this has, and it's simply not what's in the Constitution.
Let me read a little bit from the articles here, because, again, we're in a different place now that we have them. I mean, there was months of discussion about whether to impeach for Mueller or impeach for this other stuff. Now we really have them. It says Ukraine rather than Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election was a conspiracy theory or a kind of a smear that Donald Trump was hoping to prove. Why is it important at a basic level to even bother including that? I mean, the going after Biden is, everyone's talked about making this simple. That's a simpler story than this Putin wanted to frame this country that he's partially invaded.
Well, I at least the way I read that article was one to say there is not a defense here that Donald Trump was trying to do something legitimate because we had a debunked conspiracy theory that his own team was telling him repeatedly was debunked, that he himself had, so he had no really good reason to believe it, except that he has this call with President Zelensky of Ukraine the day after Robert Mueller testifies on his report of his probe. And so it's...
Let me push back on that, yeah, though, because just at a logical frame, and I say push back, although it's not like you wrote these articles, but if the argument is keep it simple and post-Mueller, yes, Donald Trump did this, but you could also argue Donald Trump, there was evidence of obstruction of Mueller probe, but the way Mueller put it was substantial evidence in five incidents. This brings it back, as your answer just did. Aren't the Democrats bringing back Mueller through a side door by getting into this rehash?
Well, two things. The Democrats, in the way they crafted these articles, absolutely are leaving the door open to talk about a pattern of behavior. They say explicitly in both articles that what they are alleging as abuse of power, what they are alleging as obstruction, are patterns of behavior of Donald Trump as evidenced in, they don't specifically say it, but in the Mueller probe, and as both in terms of what he, the number of contacts with his campaign and Russian operatives, and also in terms of obstruction of justice. So they don't say it that explicitly, but the sentences are clearly about that.
Right.
But the other
reason
let me
fit
important.
In a break because you're staying, and part of what you're saying is that Article 1 necessarily brings in aspects of Article 2, the obstruction of Congress and these larger questions of Donald Trump's defiance, and that's not something that the Congress is necessarily courting. It's what Donald Trump did because of what they view as his sort of criminal style. And you had one more point to make, which I promise we'll get to when we come back. I'm going to fit in a break as part of our special. Maya and Barrett stay when we come back. Closer look at this second article, as mentioned, the obstruction of Congress. And we'll break down Speaker Pelosi's impeachment strategy, a more narrow case against Trump with a clear argument to disqualify him from ever running again. And I have a very special guest on the Attorney General bar of it all, including a report that came out that undercut some of these witch hunt claims. That's all ahead on impeachment, White House in Crisis. Welcome back to our MSNBC special. The full House is prepping a vote this week to impeach President Trump. Tonight, we're taking a closer look at both of the articles of impeachment against the president. The words, the text, the evidence, and the context. The abuse of power in the Ukraine plot has obviously drawn the most attention, and we've been kicking off our coverage with that tonight. I want you to know the second article bears down on a strong precedent used in the impeachment proceedings of both Johnson and Nixon, obstruction of Congress.
President Trump engaged in unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of the impeachment inquiry. This gives rise to the second article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress.
President Trump has obstructed Congress fully, without precedent, and without basis in law. If allowed to stand, it would decimate Congress's ability to conduct oversight of this president or any other in the future.
What you're listening to there is the two chairmen of the most relevant committees here, Judiciary and Intelligence, making their case for why Donald Trump's defiance is more than just another Washington partisan battle. So let's look at the case in this second article. It's a, quote, unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of subpoenas. Now, is that fair? Is that rhetoric? Well, they lay out how the White House has been hiding evidence, discouraging cooperation with a lawful investigation, and basically building on what Democrats have also laid out in those hearings and the report, including testimony from Donald Trump's own aides who say they're not allowed to talk and they can't even get emails or evidence to support their testimony to be accurate. 71 specific individualized requests have been defied, directing officials not to testify. 9 still important witnesses who haven't been allowed to appear. And Donald Trump's defiance, in a way, could feel like old news compared to a lot of the other things. But that's also what makes this decision by the Democrats here significant. Congress is doing something that, if you think about it, and the busy weeks we've had, just take a step back. Donald Trump is doing things that he thinks he can get away with. He wants to normalize them, and if they become normalized, other presidents might get away with them too. So the Congress is saying, no, you cannot defy lawful subpoenas. This lawlessness now has consequences. And they're naming names in the witnesses who've also sided with what they call and what they're about to vote on as Donald Trump's allegedly impeachable cover-up. I want to bring into our discussion Jason Johnson, politics editor for The Root. Maya and Barrett are back as promised. Jason, your view about the necessity and the accuracy of this Congress saying this isn't another dispute. Congress and the president have disputes all the time. This is something larger. This is impeachable.
Yeah, so Ari, here's the thing. People don't show up to Congress all the time, right? I mean, there's all sorts of committee hearings where people don't show up. They claim they're going to, they RSVP, they get tired, you catch them on Instagram later. That happens in Congress. And I think members of Congress understand that not every single committee meeting is necessarily going to be viewed with respect, whether it's by the administration or even private citizens. But this is different. This is an investigation by Congress. So when subpoenas go out and the president of the United States publicly says, nobody in my administration is going to go, when the administration refuses to give forth emails and documentation, when people are testifying in front of those committees and the president of the United States actively threatens them and engages in witness intimidation, those are impeachable offenses. Not only is this not normal, it is dangerous. And we have never seen an example of a president withholding individuals, withholding information, and threatening individuals that are actually going to testify in front of Congress.
I appreciate you laying it out so clearly. Sometimes we reach for quotes or bars around here, as you know. Sometimes yes. We go into the crates, the history, the culture. I want to go back into the bars of Barbara Jordan in the political history to think about how within these proceedings, which then that was Watergate and now Ukraine, can sometimes become a blur and seemingly endless, and then a moment breaks out or someone speaks with the gravity of their office and you're reminded of this time. Starting with Jason and down the line, everyone's reaction to both what Jordan once said and what the Democrats need to summon as they go towards next week's House floor vote if they want to create some reckoning for the American public. She spoke so eloquently about the subversion and the diminution of the Constitution. Take a look.
Now, I am not going to sit here and be an idle spectator to the diminution, the subversion, the destruction of the Constitution. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century Constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder.
Jason.
She's got bars. I mean, and this is the reality that I think Nancy Pelosi needs to channel. If this is not impeachable, then basically nothing is impeachable. If we can't hold the president accountable for ignoring a branch of government and trying to subvert an entire election, then we have no true power. So I like that channeling. I hope Nancy Pelosi can do her own remix.
Maya?
Well, first of all, I want to say just the symbolic power of a black woman who did not get the benefit of the protection of the Constitution for generations, saying, I'm not going to allow it to be shred, is, I just think, a moment to pause on. In addition, and absolutely on the same page with Jason, you know, the issue here is if Donald Trump gets to say, I don't have to give you a thing. In fact, I don't have to give you a thing, even though I have not asserted a privilege that is specific to anything, and then ignores the fact that the Supreme Court itself has said there is no absolute immunity for the president when it comes to these things. There has to be a negotiation, and some things are going to have to be turned over. Then she's absolutely right here, and Nancy Pelosi and all of the Democrats are absolutely right. But more importantly, the Republicans should be deeply concerned about this themselves, because do they really want to sign up for a system which says a future president can just say no to them for any reason?
Barrett?
Yeah, I mean, I come back to looking at this through a former prosecutor's eyes, and I think about when we were making decisions about whether to bring a case or not. We never thought, you know, how is this going to make us look? Is this going to make the office look good, look bad? It was, has a crime been committed, and what is the right thing to do? And she so beautifully articulated that same analysis that they did back then and that Congress is having to confront right now. What's the right thing to do?
Jason, stay with me. Turning back to our folks here on headquarters, though, Impeachment Central, as it's become lately, I want to dig into why the obstruction matters when it is so blatant. Because everyone understands, whether you're a lawyer dealing with pushing deadlines or people buying time, there are all sorts of little ways, nicks and cuts, that goes on. But one of the things that the judiciary lawyer Barry Burke laid out is that this is part of the Trump playbook of lawlessness, which makes it different from someone using legitimate, say, security or legal privilege. And then you say it might be abused, but if they've cooperated in other ways, there's some benefit of the doubt if you're being reasonable. And that I think that accounts and applies even if you revile Donald Trump for a bunch of other reasons. Say, I revile this policy, but we got to work this out. There are rules here. Mr. Burke making the argument, I wonder how we'll see this if there is a Senate trial, that no, something much more corrosive has happened. Take a look.
President Trump is replaying the playbook used in the prior Department of Justice investigation. In that investigation, he directed his White House counsel to create a false, phony record and document and lie, denying that President Trump had told him to fire the special counsel. He did many other things to try to interfere with that investigation. He attacked the investigators and witnesses and called them horrible names, just as he has done here.
Yeah, I mean, both Maya and I probably had this experience as prosecutors. There's nothing that gets to you more than obstruction of justice, because it is the way that we are able to do our jobs. It is the way that we are able to hold people accountable, is by simple things like subpoenas. And the law demands compliance with this. And when you don't get, when you have an administration that wholeheartedly refuses to take even the smallest steps to comply with a co-equal branch.
Well, and let's pause on that and remind everyone. We have a system of government where it is the executive that enforces the laws. So it's bad enough if a corporation or an accounting firm or, I don't know, some alleged gangster, as soon as they get the document request, starts burning and shredding documents.
Right.
It is far worse from a governing perspective if that is how the executive responds.
Absolutely. And I think the frustrating thing for Congress and why Congress decided that they had to make this a standalone article for impeachment is that their hands have really been tied. They saw the mechanism of going to the judicial branch to try to have these things resolved was not effective. You have judges that were taking months and months to issue opinions. And when you are on a timetable, when you are, as the impeachment articles say, facing a continuing threat, you have to have a more efficient way of doing that, and you have to demand compliance.
Jason from Washington, our other guest, with 30 seconds to go, what do you see next this coming week?
Look, they're going to vote for the articles of impeachment. It's going to be clear. It's going to go to the Senate. But I'll pay attention to this, Ari. I want to see if there are any Democratic defectors. And what I would pay attention to is if there's any overlap between Democrats who don't vote for impeachment and those who didn't vote for Nancy Pelosi. There may still be some malcontents in the Congress who think this is an opportunity for them to make a stand and appear to be a bit more independent.
Interesting. And that then sets up what is the level of Democratic unity and what happens in the Senate and how partisan or transpartisan does this get if the evidence leads any of the discussion. My thanks to Jason for calling in there from Washington, Maya and Barrett joining me for two blocks here at our headquarters. I appreciate it. We have a lot more tonight. We're going to look at Speaker Pelosi's impeachment strategy and why she's building this particular case against this particular president. House lawmakers debating and voting on two articles of impeachment against President Trump. It reflects a decision in the making from Democratic leaders after looking at everything to decide to go with the narrowest case against Trump. Now, in past impeachments, as we've reported, there were more articles, especially at the initial phase. 11 for Johnson, 3 in draft form for Nixon, and Republicans initially teed up 4 for Clinton in public. They then narrowed it down through the process. Speaker Pelosi has made a strategic decision to start narrow. And there's a whole range of factors for that. The decision has left out all kinds of items that Democrats are on the record arguing are abuses of power or high crimes or potentially impeachable, including the discussion of bribery, of more specific election crimes, and the self-dealing and self-enrichment that Donald Trump has made something of a cottage industry. Then there is the big one, the obstruction of justice that Bob Mueller himself laid out, which Democrats have talked about as potentially impeachable offenses.
I think number one is emoluments. I think it's always been emoluments. I think it's always been about that for me.
This is a president who has equated neo-Nazis with those who protest against them in Charlottesville.
I will fight every day until he is impeached.
We are joined by New York Times columnist Michelle Goldberg, who has been all over this. And, you know, some people follow, some people summarize. I think in your writing and your advocacy, you have led on this.
Thank you.
And it is interesting to see some of the smart D.C. predictions fade and evaporate, as they often do. So we come back to you on the substance. Two articles, is that enough?
So there's two different questions. There's, is it enough politically? And I think, you know, I would obviously defer to Nancy Pelosi's judgment about what she thinks is going to get the most votes in the House, about what she thinks is going to be easiest to defend for some of her frontline members. If they're making decisions on those bases, you know, then I think she's the expert. Then there's the question of justice. You know, has Donald Trump committed other crimes? Has Donald Trump violated the Constitution in other ways? And the answer, I think, is overwhelmingly yes. There are obviously other things that he deserves to be impeached for, you know, which is one reason why I really wish that these hearings had gone on quite a bit longer and that there had been quite a bit more public airing of the scope of Donald Trump's corruption and wrongdoing since taking office.
Well, you raised that, and certainly in the Mueller case, there was an attempt to have the lead prosecutor go farther than he wanted. That didn't play well for a variety of reasons. Then there was an attempt to bring in very resistant fact witnesses like Mr. Lewandowski, who bragged about his lies. That didn't go as well either. And so I wonder, did they really get gun-shy when you could, and we have, gone through the Mueller report, sometimes with quotes and what they call sound bites, and sometimes just with other voluminous material, and do more hearings on that and roll it in? I mean, it seems to me that Mueller is above every other thing, emoluments, et cetera, because Mueller is your Republican-appointed prosecutor who didn't find one or two pieces of obstruction, but arguably at least five.
Well, again, I think it depends what metric you're judging by, right? I mean, whenever I argued for impeachment after the Mueller report, people would say the public isn't with us, the public isn't there yet, the public isn't convinced, right? So it was never a substantive argument. It's always a political argument. I don't know any Democrat that didn't actually believe that the misdeeds enumerated in the Mueller report didn't deserve impeachment. They just felt like they couldn't get to impeachment. And so, again, it's a question of—it's a political question. He obviously deserved to be impeached for those things. And those things are crimes. And I think that that's important because, you know, some of the things that he's being impeached for might be violations of the Constitution, but not indictable crimes. The things that he's accused of doing in the Mueller report, if he were not president, he could be indicted for. And so it's one of these examples of the way he's able to use the fact that he's in this office that he utterly shouldn't be in to protect himself from his own record of lawbreaking.
Yeah, and that brings us back to the echoes where precedent is doesn't resolve everything, but it does inform. And Nixon's problem was not that a few people did dirty tricks somewhere along the line. The problem ultimately, the reason that he reached a level of impeachment where the Senate Republicans were telling him he was out and he resigned, was the cover-up, which is legally called the obstruction. It seems so backwards. I guess I'm just sort of baffled, and, you know, our lonely eyes look to you. I'm baffled a little bit that somehow in this era, the cover-up and obstruction, the thing that was worse than the first thing, has now become overboard.
Well, I think that, you know, the Nixon impeachment took place in a time when there was some common objective reality, and even the most shameless Nixon defenders kind of had to bow before it. They couldn't simply go to their own TV stations and say, up is down, down is up, you know, pretend that Trump was totally exonerated by the Mueller report, just as they're pretending that all of their deep state conspiracy theories have been substantiated by this IG report, when it is the exact opposite, right? So we have sort of no solidarity from Republicans with their fellow citizens to acknowledge the reality that's in front of all of our eyes. And this is why I think so many people are tearing their hair out as they watch this process. And so because of that, I understand why Democrats wanted to go with the most cut and dried, the easiest to explain, the hardest to explain away. But it does mean basically that Trump got to break some laws without answering for them.
You're hitting on something really big and deep, which is why it's worth setting aside the time to talk this through. The founders, they got some things wrong. They got a lot of things right about human nature, which is why there are so many checks and balances. They were worried about men abusing power and office. Mm-hmm. But they certainly, you know, they didn't predict airplanes, and they didn't predict the empirical decline, the decay of truth in American life, which is what you're talking about, which is a prerequisite. You need truth to deal with accountability. So it's an important point you raised. We're not done, Michelle. I'm going to fit in a break, and we'll be having you back as we do both the impeachment and, if there is one, the Senate trial. Thank you, as always, for being here. Still ahead, a very special guest on another important story that's unfolding right adjacent to this impeachment process joins us. It's Donald Trump's Justice Department undercutting his claims that somehow they or the FBI was out to get him. Stay with us. Turning to a whole different topic, the long-awaited DOJ report on the origins of the Russia probe has finally come out, and it's making big headlines like these, clearing the FBI of President Trump's allegations of political bias, finding the FBI was justified to open the Russia probe, and debunking claims of some kind of treasonous anti-Trump witch hunt. But even though the report debunks those Trump claims, it also shines a light on some of the failures of the investigation's practices, especially regarding warrants. The report finding, quote, basic and fundamental failures in aspects of the Bureau's surveillance. NBC News summarizing it as the inspector general found parts of the warrant system have become, quote, a mess. Now, while the report debunks Donald Trump's main complaint about the Russia probe, Donald Trump's handpicked attorney general, Bill Barr, is seizing on this warrant issue.
Clear-cut evidence that the dossier that they ultimately relied on to get the FISA warrant was a complete sham. They hid information about the lack of reliability even when they went the first time for the warrant.
A complete sham. Now, let's remember, the surveillance and related investigative techniques began with the four Trump campaign advisors, you may recall. Three of them convicted, and the report found no bias or crimes, but this all has cleared one person, Carter Page. When you compare the names listed in this lengthy report, Flynn comes up about 40 times, Paul Manafort over 200, but Department of Justice investigators citing Carter Page a whopping 614 times, which means Page averages out to twice a page in the report. And over the last 2 years, he spoke with the FBI for over 10 hours, another 6 hours with the House Intelligence Committee, a bevy of television interviews, So what does Carter Page have to say now at this inflection point? Well, this key witness and subject of the audit of DOJ staff, Carter Page, is with me right here, right now, one of his very first interviews since this whole report came out. Thanks for sitting down with me.
Great to be with you again, Ari.
I'm glad to have you back wherever the story goes. I've got my report. It's a thick one. I noticed you brought yours. What do you think is important that comes out of this?
I think the first of all, great initial work by the inspector general. I had concerns just because I hadn't been had the chance to provide any input, and there were some Privacy Act questions. But in the end, it was a great first step. And I think, you know, as you correctly alluded to, and so many Americans have been talking about, just really serious, egregious misconduct. And I'm very heartened that Attorney General Barr and the team at DOJ is going to continue looking into this serious issue.
Ben Wittes, who some of our viewers may recall as an analyst, well-known in Washington, he writes, now that this has come out, quote, "If I were Carter Page, I'd read this report with some grim satisfaction. Page has a right to be pissed off. IG concluded serious errors took place in seeking Page's surveillance orders. The errors were not political." And he's referring to the fact that both things can be true, and this is a nuance that can get lost. I'm reading here from the report, 17, quote, errors or omissions in the Carter Page warrant applications. That's not nothing. But also, quote, no intentional misconduct on the part of the agents, and as I mentioned, no bias. Mm-hmm. Do you then accept that both there were mistakes with you, but there was no larger anti-Trump witch hunt found in this report?
Well, I know there was a witch hunt more broadly in terms of a lot of the direct collusion between outside actors and the FBI and DOJ. And we know this in terms of the, you know, the significant discussion of Fusion GPS, et cetera, the DNC, and their direct involvement in this. I mean, this is clearly unprecedented in terms of serious election interference. And again,
I understand
heartened.
Your view. Do you accept that this report doesn't find an anti-Trump bias on the part of the FBI? Because that's the other thing. I mean, you could kind of divide this whole thing right now into warrants. That's you.
Yes.
And then is the FBI out to treasonously take down Donald Trump? And I read the report. It says no.
Well, like I said, Ari, I think it's a first step, and we'll have to wait and see until we have the full details. I think, as is stated in the report, they had a narrow scope, you know, talking to internal people within DOJ. And I think as we look more broadly, which I know some other people in the U.S. government are now doing, I think we'll have a much clearer picture. I think it's starting a national conversation, and hopefully we'll learn a lot more as this investigation continues.
One of the things that was hard to know in real time, and we've had you on the show more than once and always tried to get your perspective, because you learn more when you check with everyone.
Absolutely.
One of the things that was hard for some people to figure out in real time is Carter Page a secret Russian spy conspiring, or is he a person who got swept up in this?
Yeah.
Now, and I want to say this in fairness to you, and we talked about it when you were on the show earlier, both the Mueller report and now this lengthy document that deals with you so many times finds you being swept up, which means, as I put it, you want to put it in plain English, you've been cleared. Yeah. And yet, do you think that Donald Trump makes it harder on people like you? You were at one point advising the campaign. Does he make it harder when, after you get cleared, he goes out and asks, as he put it, Ukraine or China to investigate his opponents? Because it kind of then dredges back up the idea that while you're in the clear, Donald Trump seems to really want foreign involvement in dealing with investigations of his rivals.
Yeah. Ari, listen, I've never met candidate Trump, president-elect President Trump ever in my life. So
you were a foreign policy advisor at one time.
Part of a volunteer for a large team. Yeah. But so I can't really speak in terms of factually. All I know is, even just based on some of these allegations which are being thrown around, I mean, what we've seen definitively with serious hard evidence here is infinitely more serious in terms of, you know, the wrongdoing and, as you said, those 17 areas of misconduct. So again, I think this is just the start. And
you say just the start. If the start of something that leads to greater public understanding or the truth, great.
Yes.
If it's the start of relitigating what now is in here done, mm-hmm. that could go both ways. I want to play one of your appearances because I'm glad to talk to you during the investigation. Since it finished, I noticed you haven't done a ton of interviews, but yeah. you were on with John Hannity and you're on with me. I think that's great. Let's look at something in that exchange that got some attention with Hannity. Take a look.
Okay.
Do you plan on going after all of these people that did this to you?
Absolutely, Sean. We have a team of attorneys going through that document in great detail and look forward to sharing that with initial thoughts with Chairman Graham and the Senate Judiciary Committee.
What are you getting at?
Well, I think, as I directly alluded to, we're planning some very serious steps, and I have a great team.
Such as?
Well, it's early days. We're all still, as you have been going through this very large document, looking at specific causes of action, but I think it's just overflowing thus far.
But you think you're looking at potentially new ways to sue the government for what you see as the violation of your rights.
And the people that were in conspiracy, essentially, with the government, or at least colluding, right? You know, going back to that old terminology. So early days, I have a great team, you know, some people that you may know, but we'll see.
And you know my last question for you. Do you feel a little bit like everyone treated you like maybe you were, you know, out there, and now you've got this report and everyone coming back to you and embracing you? Do you feel vindicated?
I feel like there's a lot that needs to be done for our country. Originally, I was a foreign policy guy, and I thought about great steps that can be done in a foreign policy context for our country, and that's why I was excited to be a volunteer with the Trump campaign. Now, having been in depth in the law, you know, all those questions and controversies we've talked about for years, Ari, I'm excited that we're in the process of doing some serious reforms. And I think the Inspector General's appearance in front of Senate Judiciary is going to be an important next step in that process.
Well, we're keeping an eye on all of it. The report has a lot of, I would argue, and I've reported, bad news for Donald Trump and Bill Barr and some of what they claimed. But it does have a lot of clearance of you, as well as serious discussions about the warrant issue. So I really appreciate you coming back.
Great to see you, Ari. Thank
Carter
you.
Carter Page,
thanks, all of all.
Really appreciate it. When we come back, another special thing we get to do on these Sunday nights, we're going to dig into some of your new questions about this impeachment vote and what to expect. I'm going to answer you up ahead. Welcome back, and now we turn to something special we get to do on these evenings. We ask you for your questions about how impeachment works, what else you want to know, and we've gotten a lot of them. Let's get right into it. Keys Claudia posts this. Why did the House only charge Trump with two crimes? Well, let's start with a technicality. The Constitution calls them high crimes or offenses. They don't have to be felonies as articles of impeachment. And this is what we were just discussing with Michelle Goldberg. Democrats chose to focus on Ukraine, thinking it was a clear-cut case and that it is something virtually everyone in the Democratic Party could get behind. There are definitely those, though, who think, as I think this questioner does, that maybe other things, other high crimes could be included, and that would presumably mean getting into that obstruction of justice outlined by none other than Bob Mueller himself. Here's another one from the Boxer Mom, hi, Mom, asking, if Trump is impeached by Congress, the House, but not the Senate, how can he still be running for re-election? Well, the answer to that, you can think about it a little bit like the analogy of a trial. The impeachment articles are like the charges. You stand accused. The trial, though, ultimately determines the guilt or not guilty verdict, right? So with impeachment, that trial then takes place in the Senate. Only a conviction there would potentially lead to Donald Trump's removal from office, which, if you're a president, is the guiltiest thing. And that actually comes right into another question from one of you, Diane, writing in on Facebook. After he's impeached, on the off chance that he is then found guilty and removed by the Senate, can Trump still run for president in 2020? Well, this is interesting. The answer is it actually really depends on what the Senate does. And here's why. Did you know that the founders actually separated the question of conviction, which removes the president, and disqualification, which says you can never run again under the law? That means Donald Trump, if he were convicted, or any president, and then was disqualified. So how does that work? It's a whole separate vote. The Constitution allows senators to vote to disqualify a president from holding the presidency or any federal office ever again. And these particular articles are arguing for that. They specifically say Donald Trump should ultimately be disqualified in the Senate. But to be clear, and this is why our viewers raise such an interesting question, the vote to disqualify him or any president under the Constitution would come after a vote on conviction. It would require only a simple majority, unlike the supermajority needed to remove a president from office. I want to thank you for watching our special. I'm glad I got through some of your questions. I'll be back Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Beat. See you then.